The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anne in Dublin says, what a lovely man your Brazilian guest Paulo is, and Cora is responding with courtesy and respect. This is heartening and in proportion to the event. Could you find some concert goers of that stature? The Middle East is a powder keg. Children are going hungry in many troubled areas of our world, but our news bulletins and airwaves have gone into a tailspin over Garth Brooks' cancelled concert. Anne says she could weep. Now, our text number is 51551, our email john@rte.ie. We often wait for a whole year to go on holidays. We plan, we buy the guidebooks, we pack, and eventually we arrive, and then, well, the destination turns out to be a bit underwhelming, disappointing even. Well, travel writer Moncon McGann is here to tell us about his biggest disappointments, and tell us about yours, by the way. Get in touch, text us 51551. Moncon, those places you went to with great hope in your heart and turned out to be turkeys, where do we go to first? You choose.
I suppose the biggest one is, because it's hardest to get to, is the equator. You know, normally you only get to the equator once in your life. And in fact, for sailors, this was a vital rite of passage. You were called a polywog until you had crossed the equator. And I remember the first time I was 19, I was in Africa, and we'd crossed overland the whole way through, down through Morocco, Algeria, the Sahara Desert, all the time, hoping to get down to Uganda, where we're going to cross it. And then there's nothing there, do you know? And you're constantly thinking, okay, I'm going to have my photo taken, but there's nothing to get your photo, to take your photo. And sometimes, I know in places like in Ecuador, and actually a bit down the road in Uganda too, they put up a sign, you can take your photo, but there's no sense of it. And so you're thinking, how can I experience it? And what does happen at night, you know, the way the sunset and sunrise happens so quick. So if you can wait around that long, you get a sense of it. But I often think, like, I mean, I've crossed the equator a lot now. And the second time was in Chimborazo, in the volcano in Ecuador. And the thing about that is far higher than Everest. It's a small volcano in Ecuador, okay? But it's far higher than Everest because the world bulges. So actually the equator is 47 kilometers wider than the poles. So I'm thinking that when I get disappointed by a place, I just need to learn more about it. You know, like battle sites. I remember I was going to go and see the Battle of the Boyne, and, you know, the site my dad was going to bring me. And you just see, it's just countryside, and he's trying to recreate the thing. So it's all about, we go with such high expectations. Yes. And then it sort of falls flat.
That's the equator dist. What else now? The next on the list.
Well, I suppose, I mean, some of the famous places that people really that get disappointed is the Little Mermaid in Copenhagen.
Why?
Well,
I haven't been there now.
Okay, so, you know, there's such a lovely story. I don't know, you go to Copenhagen and says, oh, you have to see the Little Mermaid. The Little Mermaid is just a statue. It's just a bronze statue sitting on a piece of granite done 100 years ago. And it's just, you know, it's a fine statue. There's nothing wrong with it. But Copenhagen is a fascinating place. And at least the Little Mermaid used to be right in the heart of town. Okay, so you didn't need to go very far. Now it's famous. So we go walking out along the Lange Linie, the promenade, to see this, to tick it off as one of the great things we can tell people. And you just see this boring 100-year-old bronze statue that has actually so annoyed people in the past that the poor mermaid has been beheaded twice. She's had her arm cut off. She's been covered in paint, which is one of the reasons why they've taken her out of the city centre and moved her. And that's all about just expectation, you know. Mm. It's like the other one is in Brussels, is the mannequin piss, you know, the little boy pissing into the fountain.
Yeah.
And again, at least that's in the city centre, so you don't need to go too far. But you arrive, it's just this tiny sculpture, this tiny bronze boy. And it's not even the whole thing, it's just part of a wider fountain. But again, that broke my heart, you know, thinking, OK, I'm going to go see Brussels, I have to see the peeing boy. Particularly if you're a travel writer and you're meant to, you know, you have to write about the things that other people expect to see. But then I realised, actually, the little peeing boy has this great history. It was sort of first made in the 17th century. But already people were shocked by it, that it was naked. So in 1698, the Elector of Bavaria clothed it, created clothes for the little boy. And since then, 800 different bits of clothing have been made for it, often like by really important people. So I think in about 1745, the English stole it. just as a prank, just, you know, to annoy the Belgians. And then later, about 40 years later, the French stole it. And King Louis XV, King Louis XV, was so embarrassed for his nation that this great symbol of a tiny boy peeing into a fountain was stolen from the Belgian people, that as reparation, he created this suit of brocade, of gold brocade for the thing. Anyway, it's since been stolen by other people, by the English, etc.
Anyway, very underwhelming.
Unfortunately so, yeah.
Yeah, to London next.
Yeah, I mean, Madame Tussauds. Now, I suppose I could find something interesting about that, the history of Madame Tussauds, but I thought, no, why bother? Life is too short.
Have you been there?
No, never. Why would I go? Like, you know, why would you go to a city which is full of great sites, great architecture, great history, and look at celebrities in wax? Like, I mean, I know they're creaming it. They're making money, and that's why they spread. And that idea of that trying to get near to celebrity, do you know, but being so far away and feeling more alienated because you realise you're only staring at wax. Nothing is stronger than that, than the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't like it.
No, I mean, I was totally hoodwinked by LA. I thought, this is going to be it. I'm going to feel America. I'm going to feel the roots of the movie industry. And, you know, we've all had that disappointment. You arrive in LAX, which is like a gruesome, horrendous airport anyway. You drive into LA. You first realise there's no public transport in the whole of LA. You're going to have to be taking expensive taxis, and all you're seeing is grim concrete block architecture. So then you wind your way to Hollywood. You think Hollywood Boulevard is going to come alive, and there's nothing there. You know, just smog, traffic, or boring buildings, and these 2,500 stars. You know, bronze stars, most of them are people you've never heard about. Like, there's 15 blocks of stars on Hollywood Boulevard, more on Vine Street. So, again, you feel the fool. You know, why am I going to see sort of handprints and famous names in a pavement? How further can I be from celebrity?
Okay, next time. So LA is not for you. You're not going to be going back there anytime soon.
No, I definitely am.
What about cities that you visited and you've just found them to be ugh?
I'm embarrassed to admit. Like, at the moment, you know, the way Iceland is the coolest, the happeningest, the hippest destination. And Iceland is great outside Iceland. But I was disappointed by Reykjavik.
Why?
And that, you see, that says all about me. That says I'm not cool and hip and hipster and chic. But, you see, the little fishing village of Reykjavik itself, the few wooden houses are beautiful, but that's only like two blocks. Now, I spent a month in Reykjavik, and you can't just keep on walking around the equivalent of Temple Bar, you know, their lovely wooden blocks. And even that area, it's so full of bearded hipsters and people sipping, you know, expensive, rare types of coffee and chic organic buns that it does my head in. But beyond that, it is a city designed for cars. So in fact, they followed the LA model. So basically, the minute you get outside that little fishing village, vast boulevards that are impossible to walk, everyone driving at high speed. So in terms of car design, they took it from America. In terms of house design, they took that Northern European boring model of, you know, just apartment blocks, of grim apartment blocks. And Reykjavik, because it's north, unless it's snowing, it's kind of grim. It's grey and grim. Now, I know you're never meant to say that, and it is...
Well, you're allowed. You're allowed. Yeah. It's a free country. And the next place is an interesting choice, Venice.
Yeah.
A lot of people wax lyrical about it. I think it's the greatest place on earth.
I was so looking forward to Venice. And I realised, okay, you need to be informed about things. So for pleasure, I had read Colm Tobin's The Master, which sort of injects you, gives you a pure adrenaline injection of the potency of Venice. But then I wrote the classic work on it, which is Jan Morris's book on Venice. And they were all talking about the gleaming light and the rare sounds through the alleyways and how the medieval splendour appears in ghostly apparitions out of the water and around buildings and under the caves. And I mean, you just go and, you know, particularly we go in summer and you're crowd tourists everywhere. Yeah. And I'm realising all I'm seeing is people trying to sell me cheap rip-off glass of Venetian glass and you know, people selling ridiculously overpriced boat rides. At nighttime, Venice works because then you don't see the people and then you do get the echoing through the laneways.
But not during the day.
No, and the big question is, when I'm leaving, am I sad to leave and will I return? And I mean, I won't return to Venice by choice. I know next year I think there'll be a Venice Biennale. I want to see the Irish representative, so I might go there just as a business trip, but I won't be thinking I'm in Venice again. It's gorgeous.
We're going to bring you back home for the last one we have time for this morning, which is a place which I think is regarded as our most popular tourist attraction.
Yeah.
You do not like the Guinness Storehouse.
No, I mean, I love Guinness, you know, and I have, like so many Irish people, you have this romantic, this deep connection with Guinness as a drink, and it actually suffers effort quite a lot by going to the Guinness Hop Store, because suddenly the romance was broken. Suddenly I realised that this is just a sort of a consumable, a profit-making consumable drink by a multinational corporation. And it's no clearer that when you go to the Hop Store, which is just the Guinness Storehouse, which is just like, it's a collection of sort of trade show gimmicks and crass audio-visual sales techniques in a big building, which you're paying €16 for, and then in theory you get this free half pint of Guinness at the end.
The foreigners love it.
Well, if you look at TripAdvisor, yes, to be fair, half or maybe more than half, maybe three quarters of the foreigners love it. A quarter realise they're being sold a pig in a poke. And I loved what Rough Magic said about it, which the editor said, like, you go to Ireland, you go to Dublin, everything is being sold through the element of Guinness. It's like, you know, if you're either going to a pub, you're going to Guinness, you have to go to the Guinness Storehouse, your Guinness. It's just being crammed down your throat. There's so much more to Dublin than Guinness.
Well, Moncon, thank you for coming in this morning and sharing your experiences of underwhelming destinations with us. But I suppose most places you go to, you knock a bit of crack out of and you enjoy.
Yeah, so, I mean, the whole thing is...
We'll do that the next list.
Exactly,
we'll do that
celebrating
the next
the world.
All right, okay. That's all we have time for this morning. On sound, Ciarán Dunn, our researcher was Spíseach Zelinsky, and today's producer was our series producer, Margaret Curley. Sean is up next. We're back in the morning at 9. Till then, slán.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.